This is Edwin O'Shea. We're going to talk about section 1.5 for Math 235, Calculus 1. So we start off immediately with Theorem 120. We're talking about limits of combinations of functions. And up until now, we've taken a lot of these rules for granted, but we're just going to carefully spell them out. Let me just focus maybe on the second one, which is the sum rule. And it basically says that the limit of a sum is the sum of the limits. So if you want to compute, say, the limit of f of x plus g of x as x approaches c, the claim is that you can just individually compute the limit of f of x as x approaches c, and to it add the limit of g of x as x approaches c. The difference rule is similar. A limit of a difference is the difference of the limits. The product rule is similar. The limit of a product is the product of the limits. The quotient rule, the limit of a quotient is the quotient of the limits. Note there's a special condition that, of course, assumes that you have the limit of the denominator actually exists as x approaches c. And then finally, the composition rule. You have to be a touch careful about the composition rule. Note that it's saying that the limit of a composition, f of g of x, is equal to f of the limit of g of x as x approaches c. And note that it has this condition that assumes that f is continuous at the limit of g of x as x approaches c. Now, if it were not continuous, then you wouldn't have the limit of g of x as x approaches c. You wouldn't have it. It's not so much that it wouldn't exist. It's that, well, do you know what? I'm going to let you think about that, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in class as well. It's maybe a little bit hard to describe over the audio file. But pay attention to that and see if you can figure it out for yourself. And then Theorem 1.21 says that you could take any combination of sums, differences, products, etc., and that those are also continuous. All right. Theorem 122, again, nothing surprising, continuity of an algebraic function. And then moving on to finding limits by cancelling or squeezing on the next page. So the first result here is Theorem 1.23. This is something we've been wanting to do for a long time. Notice in the example just above Theorem 1.23, you have the limit of x squared over x minus 1 as x approaches 1. That's equal to, note the numerator factors into x minus 1 by x plus 1 by a difference of squares. And now notice what the last equality here says. It effectively says just cancel out the two x minus 1s. It's this process we've been wanting to do for a long time. And Theorem 1.23 tells us that indeed we can do that. We can perform that cancellation. Theorem 1.24 is a very interesting result called the squeeze theorem. And it's a really wonderful result, extremely useful for computing limits. So here's what it says. It might be better maybe to skip to the figure that comes right after Theorem 1.24. But it says that if you have a function, you're going to see this as a blue line, right? If you've got a blue line whose behavior is kind of hard to measure, it's kind of hard to control. If you know that it's sandwiched between two, you know, in the case of the graph, an orange and a red function, and if you understand how the orange and the red functions behave in this example here as x gets close to zero, then you can also get a handle on how the blue function behaves as x approaches zero. So what it's doing is that the orange and the red is squeezing f of x, the f of x being the function that's a little bit maybe harder to understand. We see some nice examples here with the squeeze theorem. We'll talk a little bit more about these in exercises a little bit later. But for now, if you just look at the example that follows the proof of the squeeze theorem, you'll see that one argument made is that the sine of theta is sandwiched between 0 and theta. So the squeeze theorem will tell you, as it goes on to say, that because sine of theta is sandwiched between 0 and theta, then the limit of sine of theta as theta approaches 0 is going to be sandwiched between the limit of 0 as theta approaches 0, which is a 0, of course, and also the limit of theta as theta approaches 0, which is also 0. So by the squeeze theorem, the limit of sine theta as theta approaches 0, note, of course, it's from the right-hand side, must be equal to 0. And then likewise for cosine theta. Now finally, at long last, we get to define the number e, definition 1.25. Maybe this is one that will take us maybe the longest to wrap our heads around. And you see a definition here. So before getting into this definition, I would skip right ahead to exercise 24. Skip right ahead to exercise 24. I repeat, go straight to exercise 24 and then come back to the definition of the number e. Read the section, of course, and you'll notice theorem 1.26 is an alternate characterization of the number e, which is very useful in terms of how it's describing a limit. Note you have in the proof, you have worked through these steps in the proof. The symbols here, of course, you're seeing is that, you know, you're seeing a symbol for, you know, if and only if, or logically equivalent. So look through that as well very carefully. And then finally, now with e defined, we get to talk about continuity of exponential and logarithmic functions. And basically we're saying that e to the x, natural log of x, sine of x, cosine of x, etc., etc., that all these functions are continuous on their domains. All right. Notice that the earlier result that we used on the squeeze theorem is very handy in theorem 1.28 for proving continuity of sine and cosine. And then likewise then for note that the inverse trigonometric functions, like remember just intuitively that those are in some senses like the reflection of the original functions on an appropriate domain. Well, just in very intuitive terms, if you think about your figure drawn with a pencil and never lifted without the pencil being lifted off, then the inverse functions, you would also expect them to be continuous as well. All right, we're going to skip the delta epsilon proofs. And now we see some nice examples. So starting off with example one, you'll have a chance to think about those in exercises 29 through 70. I think I picked every third one there. So look at example one for each of those. Note the care that they're saying that the limit, note that the care given, say, in part A, again, you're applying that the limit of a sum is the sum of the limits. And then in the second part, you're using the constant multiple rule. And then you're evaluating the limits of continuous functions. And lastly, again, I know that you just want to jump in example one, you just want to jump and just say, well, just let x equal to 3. But right now we're just kind of confirming things very carefully. So make sure to take the care to go through that. Example two, you're going to see similar problems to example two in exercises 71 and 74 through 78. So that's 71, 74, 75, 76, 78. And it's just kind of talking about the limits and continuity of piecewise functions. Nothing surprising there. The examples aren't really going to help you out. Example four, you find the limit with a squeeze theorem. Now, I want us to look at this particular example here with example four. It'll be very helpful. So you're trying to look at x squared sine of 1 over x. Now, look at the graph of that original function. It kind of oscillates and jumps all over the place. If you try and compute the limit directly, well, sine of 1 over x is not even continuous at x equal to 0. It's not even defined at x equal to 0. So you have no chance of hoping for any kind of continuity that you can just replace x with 0 everywhere and hope for the best. But now look at what's happening in the picture on the right. You'll see this original kind of crazy erratic function, right? Think of it in terms of, say, like, you know, like a river with kind of like a very strong kind of, you know, undercurrent. And then what are you doing? You're kind of you have the banks of the river in some way, right? The sandwich or the squeeze. You have the function of squeeze between x squared and negative x squared. So the original function, x squared times the sine of 1 over x, is just sandwiched between x squared and minus x squared. Now it's very easy to see that, and it just comes down to the fact that the sine of 1 over x, as erratic as it may be, it is still sandwiched between minus 1 and 1. So if sine of 1 over x is sandwiched between 1 and minus 1, then the original function f of x is sandwiched between minus 1 times x squared and plus 1 times x squared. And again, look at examples 79 through 86 for looking at the squeeze rule. We also have a nice table here on example 5. Again, that will be especially helpful looking at exercise 24. And then you've got the exercise, folks, as already assigned. Now, notice that with questions 5 and 6, these kind of look like a trick question, but they're really not. It's what it's trying to say is, you know, in 5 and 6, what if you had some of these, like, you could have one of the limits just plain not being defined, and the other one being defined perfectly fine. So that's a nice problem to think about once again. All right, folks, and I think that's it. See you in class.